I said, listen, I've traveled every road in Pennsylvania. I've been everywhere.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to a special Barnstormaholitics crossover extravaganza. I used to watch Sabadeo Gigante. Did you guys ever see that on Spanish language channels? It's like a big variety show. So Domingo Gigante. So this is Jordi Comas. I'm going to, we're really excited tonight because we're going to do some reactions to a recent Democratic primary debate for people running for Senate in Pennsylvania. But first, let me throw it to, everyone's favorite, maybe not a millennial co-host, co-producer for Barnstorming. Taylor, take it away.
Hello. Welcome to Barnstorming. My name is Taylor Lightman. I used to work in politics professionally. Now I do neighborhood revitalization. It's my pleasure to be here with y'all, and especially Terrain. It's a pleasure to have you on again. Welcome.
Thank you for having me. It is a pleasure to be here, and it's nice to see your face. You look good.
Thank you.
Taylor got a lot of sun yesterday.
I did, the Arts Festival. It was the Arts Festival yesterday, and it was a beautiful day in Lewisburg. And come next year. It's always a Saturday in April.
It is tremendous. I got to see just the first 30 minutes, and after the long cloistering, if I can use that word, because of the pandemic, you know, the long isolation. This was the first, I think it was canceled 2 years
what
running.
Is cloistering?
Like when religious people live behind closed walls. So I was trying to say we've all been in the long indoors, the long forced in, you know, indoor isolation. You're not helping me out here, Taylor.
Okay.
I was looking for a rope and you hit me on the head with a paddle.
Wait, really quickly. And I don't know if this is a live story, but
sure is now.
Yes, let's go.
Melia told some of her Turkish friends that I was Jewish, and they asked her if we had to have sex through a sheet. Which I didn't.
Jewish thing?
Huh?
I don't think it is, but that was like their first question. And she was like,
what
are you talking
question
about?
Question one.
What?
did they watch Handmaid's Tale and get confused?
I don't know, but that was like their first question, which is so funny.
That's funny. While we're off topic, one of my Spanish cousins, when we first moved to Pennsylvania, even the first time, I think, in the 90s when we lived in Bethlehem, he goes, oh, Pennsylvania, I know all about that, where the conservative Jews live. And we were like, no.
Yep.
I mean, sure, but, and he was like, no, I saw it, the movie with Harrison Ford.
Yeah, no, they're definitely, yeah.
he was like, no, I saw the movie with Harrison Ford. They farm and they're conservative Jews. And we're like, no, those are Amish. He's like, no, they're conservative Jews. I know, I saw the movie. And we're like, you did not understand the movie. Those were Amish.
Not Jews.
Yeah, not Jews. So what was the best part of your weekend, Taylor? Not Taylor. Sorry, Terrain.
The best part of my weekend?
Sure.
I don't know. We had a good alcoholitics recording today. We recorded earlier today. We also talked about debate. So a lot of the things that I'm going to say are going to be repeated.
Fantastic. And how can people check out alcoholitics?
Well, they can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or pretty much anywhere you get your podcasts.
Podbean?
Probably. Yeah, sure.
Budapod.
Podbean, Stitcher. Podstock. Stitcher, yeah. Stitcher, SoundCloud? Smitcher, Witcher, all the...
Oh, yeah, definitely SoundCloud, actually. It's exclusively on,
SoundCloud. Listen, it's a small audience, but very faithful.
You know, we released our first podcast on SoundCloud.
Absolutely.
We were at one point exclusive on SoundCloud.
I 1,000,000,000% was, I think when I started Alcoholics, I'm like, all right, SoundCloud. I'm like, oh, wait, no.
Yeah.
I could do it this way and be on everything instead.
Right. Well, I mean, I like the premise of SoundCloud, and like, you know, sometimes there's music on there, I hear, but for podcasts, like you have to pay a huge amount to, you know, once you get past like an
hour.
Yeah, it's
not worth it for podcasts.
No. Sound like the hosting isn't great.
Yeah.
I once told somebody that I liked music on SoundCloud, and they were like, they really judged me pretty hard.
I've heard some not good music too, so I...
Yeah, I've also heard not good music on SoundCloud.
I mean,
I do like SoundCloud.
False. Mm-hmm. All of the music on SoundCloud is good. I'm shooting for that SoundCloud sponsorship money. It's the best. I can't think of anything better than listening to what at this point amounts to a weird emo rap situation.
Yeah.
You know, that sponsorship may be paid in a new SoundCloud Bitcoin called
Cloud. Yeah, exactly. They'll pay you exclusively there. Yeah.
I'll take Cloud Coin. Look, money exists because we all agree that it exists. Yes. So as long as I just heavily agree that crypto is real, then I'm going to get paid the big bucks. And it's
that's fine. Right. And just remember to cash out before the bubble bursts.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's,
yeah.
That's and- good. So,
which might have happened.
I would love to do a podcast where we just give our worst uninformed opinions about cryptocurrency.
Oh, I think we just started it.
I don't want to be in that one.
Come on, Jermaine, you can be on Matt podcast, Jordy and Taylor arguing about pricing philosophy podcast, or uninformed opinions about crypto. You know, you got to choose one.
I definitely can't do uninformed opinions about crypto.
I will just say, do you guys get a shit ton of like spammy advertisements for cryptocurrency? No. Or is that just me?
On what platform? Email or?
Every platform. I get them all the time on WhatsApp. I get weird text messages about crypto.
Do you know how people
text messages about crypto?
Yeah, I get Instagram DMs about crypto. Do you guys, does that not happen?
No, you may want to look into that. I know, you know how people say, thinking about advertisements, you know how people will say like, I didn't change, the Republican Party changed or whatever, like that kind of. So I feel this way with some podcast I love, which will remain nameless, but like that I've listened to for maybe a couple of years. And the ads used to be for things like Magic, listen to me trying to get ads, right? Magic cereal.
Magic Spoon. It's called Magic Spoon.
Yeah, clearly yeah. I'm a big fan. Magic Spoon, Tommy John's underwear. Now I'm getting like
hair replacement.
Hair replacement, testicle massaging, and sperm replacement. And I'm like, I haven't changed, the podcast changed, okay, right? So
I honestly, like 1,000,000,000% thought I knew what podcast you were talking about. When you said the hair replacement, I'm assuming you were talking about Keeps. And mm-hmm. then you said two other things, and now I'm not sure what podcast you're talking about.
I have not
heard one advertisement like that on there.
I don't think I've ever been advertised for those things.
I don't think they have the ability to segment like that. I think they can, actually.
I don't think that they can. I don't think that they can be like, only Jordy's going to hear this
right.
Replacement advertisement.
It's a function. If you looked at it through Twitter or something, maybe they could, but not sort of original OG podcast technology.
I think we're off topic.
We're way off topic, but I just want to, one last thing. While we stay in the land of off topic, Off Topica is in a continent near Papua New Guinea, Off Topica. How many times do you all think I was arguing with my voice to text today when I was texting Taylor, trying to get it to understand Terrain is your name and not TARRAIN. How many times did I repeat it, trying to see if it could, I could force it to learn Terrain your name as opposed to,
I don't know. Cause I imagine you can't get it to just say text my name.
It was about four times.
It never worked, right?
No, it doesn't work.
It didn't work.
They sound the same.
Terrain, really quickly, next week, Alcoholics episode. I think I'm on it. What do you want to tease it here?
I did. You are on it. I wasn't going to say anything because Jordy isn't, and that felt weird.
No.
That's okay.
No,
it actively felt awkward, and I'm like, I don't.
We have unbreakable solidarity. Nothing is going to split us up unless it's an argument over something silly.
We are having the first live Alcoholics in a decent while. Holy shit! Sorry about that. We are having the first Alcoholics in a decent while. We will be. It'll be an exclusively ad themed episode. We will be watching political ads and reacting to them. You saw a little bit of that in previous live barnstorming episodes where people played ads and I screamed through them. So it's going to be very similar to that. So check that out when it comes out. When we will be recording it live on, I want to say the 7th. I think it's at like 8.
I'm still angling for an invitation to a Succession themed podcast, and I've preserved my Succession you know, how can I say this? Like virginity, like I've not watched it because I thought that would make for like good content where like you all have watched it and I'd watch it for the first time. But have I, you know, is that a thing that'll happen or am I fishing in the wrong creek?
No, that's a thing that I want to happen. I was hoping to do that with a frequent guest on this show. But she's been obviously super busy. We didn't talk about it for like literal months. So I think I'm going to have to, I think that might venture on that. At some point.
For whatever it's worth, I'm still interested too.
I think I can speak for the said person as I know her well. And I think later in the summer, she might be free episode? To do it.
What's the title?
No Real Podcast Involved.
No, I thought it was something else.
No, it's that. It's a play on No Real Person Involved, which if you don't know the show, it will mean nothing to you. That's No Real Podcast Involved. We had like, I think I brainstormed some names, but that was the one that we had agreed to.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
SoundCloud, a name. You're ready to go.
Yeah. Yes. The Succession themed podcast exclusively on SoundCloud. And we'd like to thank our advertisers Keeps and Blue Apron for sponsoring the show. Do you want someone to mail you food that you have to cook still? Blue Apron.
Well, let's get started with what we're here for tonight. It is
just to talk about Blue Apron, the best food supply. Yeah. The supply chain can't stop Blue Apron from sending old broccoli to your home.
You know, I love to do
through there once.
What I love to do is listen to SoundCloud while I make my Blue Apron. There's a special podcast called Blue Aprons Are Us, and it's people who make music while they're making Blue Apron. They record on like a Casio drum machine.
One time, I was eating my Magic Spoon cereal,
and a safe security system
actually fell out. It was surprised in the security in the cereal box. Isn't that crazy?
that was a really good
magic show. Spoon and simply the magic... safe fell out.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't either. We're really gonna have to sell a lot of merch to make up for all the sponsors we pissed off on this show. However, we do have a shop open, which you can visit at our website, barnstorming.org. Look for the shop link.
Barnstormingpa.org.
Barnstormingpa.org. And then look for the shop. And then how do you find it? I guess you just go to our Instagram or Facebook page, Instagram profile, and there's a link.
Yeah, I know there's a view shop. Yeah. We're also on Etsy for whatever
hot,
it's worth.
Etsy. Hot sellers, the cannabis, the hex sign, the Pennsylvania Dutch hex sign with a cannabis leaf. That's been a hot seller.
Yeah, huge hot seller. Nice. People love that shit.
A lot of people in California buying it.
Actually, yes.
So this is what we're going to do. We're going to play some clips that Terrain crack researcher timestamped for us. Terrain's already shaking his head. I have not seen the whole debate. I listened to parts of it. And Taylor, I think that this is fresh for you, right?
It's fresh for me, yeah.
I do think, you know, in case there's people who don't follow Pennsylvania politics super closely, does anyone want to kind of contextualize this a little bit? Taylor, please help me. Like why is the Senate race important? What's going on? Can you paint a picture?
Yeah. And, you know, obviously we have a 50-50 Senate right now with, Vice President Harris as the tie breaking vote. So, it's a very contentious year, 2022, and there's very few competitive states that have open seats. Pennsylvania is one of them. One of the very few actually. Mm-hmm. So this presents us as Democrats a really incredible opportunity to, and it's currently a Republican seat, so we could actually flip a seat, and that would be really awesome. Hold on to some other seats, flip one, might end up in a better position than when we started. Anybody else want to take a crack at that?
I just want to point out, without control of the U.S. Senate, and when I say control, we literally need to win 2+ seats than we already have in order to get anything from this administration done that we want done. We can yell about how Biden isn't getting stuff done all day, and trust me, if you've listened to Alcoholitics, I absolutely have, but one of the biggest problems is Two of the senators in the Democratic Senate like to derail progress to suit whatever needs they have, whether it be Kyrsten Sinema's vanity or Joe Manchin's energy interests. So with getting rid of, flipping 2+ seats in the Senate while holding what we have, we can get rid of the filibuster and pass meaningful legislation.
Yeah. And I mean, I think
that
I just
thought that will die in the House because we're going to lose the
House. I don't think we're going to lose the House. Well, we could. I don't know. But hopefully not.
I hope not, too.
And I just want to point out that there are substantive differences between the major Senate candidates. But one of the areas of agreement is that they all want to remove the filibuster. Mm-hmm. So that's an area of agreement.
Yes.
They've all said that. Yeah. So that's pretty cool. So here's the debate.
Oh, whoa. you threw that fastball at me a little too fast there, buddy.
Okay, all right. And we set it up and Jordy, go.
Yeah.
Nice. No, I actually
nice T-ball pitch set up straight to you.
Yeah. There was this really today coming home, I listened to an episode of a podcast by The Economist called, I think it's called Checks and Balances. So this is the British publication, The Economist. They have this podcast just about American politics. I it's one of these ones that I subscribe to, but I don't know if I've ever listened to. Have you all ever listened to it?
No.
So, but they decided that this race, the Senate race, was, you know, for
in
their
Pennsylvania.
Global. Yes, sorry. The Senate race in Pennsylvania. Thank you, Taylor. Was the one to focus on to really encapsulate what the midterms are about. I actually was thinking, you know, maybe some other time we can go back and revisit some of it because it was really, you know, it's one of these things. Like if you ever live someplace, like I've lived in Barcelona, for example, where you read about it in a guidebook and you're like, yeah, but not quite, right? Mm-hmm. Or Terrain, I don't know if you're from Schuylkill County, right? You ever read a guidebook about Schuylkill County?
No.
That actually sounds like it would be really fun now that I think about it.
I don't think so.
If one exists. But so in this Economist, they were like, Pennsylvania is, you know, I actually learned something that I knew, of course, about William Penn. And I knew he was a troublemaker and his father was a military officer. But Charles II rebuilding the British royalty, not the royalty, but the monarchy, had borrowed money from William Penn's father, who was a military person, but also, I guess, very wealthy. And then he died before the money could be repaid. And William Penn went to Charles II and said, well, why don't you give me this land? He wanted to just call it Sylvania, which fits more. It kind of makes sense because Quakers are more about like certain Christian ideals about modesty and other things. And it was King Charles who insisted that it honor Penn's father. So that's where it became Pennsylvania. So.
I think we're really off the rail here.
Am I? So, but this is one of the things that was interesting to me was they did kind of an okay job explaining Pennsylvania's a state with many different regions, but they went Philadelphia, big city, and then they said the farmlands of the northern tier near the New York border. I'm like, that's not really the farmlands. You sort of skipped it. The farmlands are more like Lancaster, Burke, you know, York. And then they talked about Erie being like the Midwest. And then they talked about the Southwest and coal. And they did not mention Pittsburgh at all, which is a pretty major metropolitan area.
That's going to make a lot of people mad. That's going to really make a lot of people upset.
I once did a international interview with some German reporter about Pennsylvania politics. And they just didn't understand it at all. And I probably gave like a very similarly poor answer.
Oh, really?
The different geography. It's kind of a lot on the spot to like. It's a very like geographic. It's a huge state with a lot of people, and it's like there's also just like it's very. I mean, they call it the Keystone State because it's like. I don't know. I feel like we're really off topic now.
I feel you were about to say why it was called the Keystone State.
I know why it's called the Keystone State.
Realized what you were about to say.
Exactly. Yeah.
Not why it was called the Keystone State and bailed by going,
let's move on. Yeah.
I totally agree with that. I watched your face go, absolutely not. We're not doing it.
So let me throw this up just because this is also interesting to me. According to Franklin and Marshall, which has Terrain, I feel like you know more about this than maybe you, Taylor. They have a pretty good reputation, right, for polling. This was their April poll results for the Democratic primary. So for our audio people, it has for the Democratic primary with a margin of error, probably plus or minus 5, just knowing that they're pretty reliable. Do not know is 26%. So that's
356 people took it, right? Is that what that says?
Yeah. That's, I mean,
that's kind of small.
It is, but that's usually what you need for plus or minus 5%. 41% John Fetterman, and this is registered, not likely voters. So if you're a poll person, you have to, you know, who turns up is different than just registered. But John Fetterman at 41% of registered Democratic primary voters. Connor Lamb at 17, Kenyatta at 4, 9% someone else, none at 2%, and do not know at 26%. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not really going to get into the GOP details, but just to, you know, to talk about the difference between a front runner status, Mehmet Oz is or Mehmet, however you say that, is 16% compared to 41, and their do not know it is 43%. So there's a lot more, at least nominally, undecided on the Democratic side. So yeah, I thought that might be kind of useful context. You guys want anything to add to that?
Definitely a lot of undecided. By the way, when you're in this mode, there is definitely an echo.
Oh no.
Just so you know, along with that, there was another like a recent poll that was like taken. So that one was done like from the 30th to the 10th. There's another poll that was taken from the 5th to the 7th of April that had Fetterman at 44, Lamb at 19, Kenyatta at 17, other at 4, undecided at 15. So we're looking at a race that truly does. I mean, there's a clear front runner. And then, the poll that had Kenyatta at 4, I honestly think is an outlier because everything else has him up, like, you know, somewhere like somewhere close to Connor Lamb's number, but like, you know, just a couple of points away. So that, I mean, just the fact that that's the only one that shows that to me kind of looks like an outlier, but I'm also biased in that regard.
I'm glad you said that. I don't put much stock in polls. You know, like Taylor pointed out, this was registered voters, not likely. That makes a huge difference.
You pointed that out.
Sorry, but you pointed out it was only 356. So it's not a huge sample size. Yeah, and more importantly, Fetterman has run for statewide office twice. So it mostly is capturing his name recognition. So I think his front runner status is a bit soft.
It may be, but the one I referenced had the margin of error was 4, and there were like 600 polled likely voters. So
likely voters. Oh, very interesting. Big difference.
So I'm not. You know, I do think it's an uphill climb for Lamb and Kenyatta. Mm-hmm. I don't think that they're out of it yet. We still have like, you know, a little over 2 weeks until the primary in PA, but. We have a clear front runner, which is we can sort of see that based on the way these debates are going for him.
Oh, I just see we had another Pittsburgh hater. I'm gonna guess that's one of your legions of followers there. Terrain, do you see the
That's my boy Drew talking truth about Pittsburgh, that it's just something we tell kids to scare.
I tell my kids that sometimes on long car trips there isn't NPR to scare them. Okay, so let's watch the first clip. This is the one that you labeled equality. Well, we'll just play it and go from there.
I tried to give two clips for each candidate that showed what they excelled in or something like that. Just so I didn't seem biased.
There's some super reverb.
Every time he goes into the shared screen mode, there's.
is it happening now or just when I talk? Like when I don't talk?
It happens when Taylor talks. You're fine.
Okay, well, don't talk, Taylor.
So how would that be enforced? I do not support assault weapons. And I do support a ban. I, however, do not.
But this is the one. Have I got the right one?
You do not. I did not pick a clip from Alexandria Khalil. No offense to Ms. Khalil, but I didn't choose one.
Okay. Let me. You said 1930. Oh, it didn't go far enough.
I hope that it was clear in the message that I sent, and I was going backwards.
I put on the thing.
It's how much time is left.
That makes sense because it's easier to see as yes, I played with exactly. this too.
It was and if, it doesn't show the other thing, so it shows what's it shows what's left in an easier way.
Mm-hmm. All right, here we go. This is like a bad video game where, for people who don't know, the PCN interface, it doesn't let you have much control. So I'm trying to move my, do you know what I mean? Terrain, I'm trying to move my hand just a micro millimeter to go from like 2028 to 1942.
I get you. It's easier to do when you're in full screen mode. I also want to point out that there was a comment that replied to Drew that was insisting that Pittsburgh is real. And all I'll say is prove it. Prove it.
The Equality Act, but also what is your message to LGBTQ Pennsylvanians frustrated with a politically charged atmosphere that makes any immediate movement on federal legislation such as the Equality Act seem unlikely?
I do slight quibble. It has only stalled in the United States Senate. I always feel the need to defend the House's record because we have passed the Equality Act with my vote twice since I've been there. There are a lot of Pennsylvanians that are understandably not just frustrated but scared by the debate that's going on. Chambersburg here in our own state became one of the first towns to roll back an anti-discrimination ordinance. It's the kind of thing we wouldn't have to worry about if we had the Equality Act because it would put these protections into the federal laws to govern everyone. But what I think is so just distasteful about this is, you want to say to some of these Republican politicians, how about you pick on somebody your own size? You know, they're going after children, kids who, you know, may have questions that seem unusual to a lot of families, but they have them. And if that's your kid and you're their parent, you want to make sure you get those questions answered by people that know what they're talking about. You don't want your child dragged out into the public and thrown off the sports team and made into a spectacle because of something that they really are experiencing. So I'm against all these efforts to scapegoat kids. I think we can make good policy without doing that.
Was that the whole clip?
Yeah, that was longer than I had said, but I think the fullness of his answer was great. That was Connor Lamb speaking on the Equality Act and the recent uptick in anti-LGBTQ legislation through numerous states by Republicans, primarily referring to what's going on in Florida with Ron DeSantis, who's just doing his early act in order to run for president in 2024.
I thought that was a really strong answer.
Mm-hmm.
What I think was
strong about it, not just the fact that he, you had him sticking up for a marginalized community. You also had him point out in his own record, like, we've passed the Equality Act in the House twice. So this isn't a problem. This is a Senate problem, and I will go into the Senate and make sure that this gets passed. I think that was a very good answer and substantial.
Yeah. I mean, I also think what what he did really well there was he didn't get mired in like the specifics of it. It was just like, no, this is about protecting kids. And this is about making sure that we have freedom of speech in our public schools and that people can explore topics that they need in the public discourse openly. And, without fear of professionals and with the help of professionals, like mm-hmm. plain and simple. Yeah. I think it was good.
I mean, I know he has a small child and another one on the way. And so it was a nice moment of connecting that to his own experience. Let's do the next one. Let's see. So Terrain, you said this one was, Fetterman enters anti-choice attempts. So I think I've got this right. 5541 from the end.
5541 from end. This is when Fetterman is asked about choice in the debate.
I believe that is between a woman.
I'm going to go back a little bit.
Revoke Roe v. Wade.
I went the wrong way. Sorry.
I think you want to go until there, there's 55-41 left.
it's like sort of hiccuping on restreaming.
Actively banned most abortions in the state, and the court has signaled it may uphold a Mississippi law that bans abortions after 15 weeks of pregnancy. What specific policies in the Senate would you support to protect abortion access, and are there any limits on abortion you would find appropriate?
Yeah, great question. And let me just say that I am profoundly proud to be the first line of defense in the veto chain in Pennsylvania should Governor Wolf be unable to perform his duty to veto down and strike down these Texas-like laws that the state legislature constantly sends up. I believe that a women's reproductive freedom is sacred, and I believe that it's settled case law, and we can never go backwards on that regard. If I'm in the United States Senate, I would immediately support the first campaign to support the elimination of the filibuster to make sure that we codify women's reproductive freedom in law to make sure that even if the Supreme Court does go down that road and eliminate or revoke Roe v. Wade, that we already existingly codify that into law and make sure that we can't go back. Abortions are going to continue in America, whether it's legal or not. They just won't be safe if they're illegal. And we can't ever go back to that. We just can't.
And are there any limits?
And just what?
Oops, I stopped sharing by accident. Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
That's okay. Just to finish that clip, though, when asked that question about if there are there any limits, he says that the limits of this should be between a person, a person giving birth and their doctor. Which, fantastic answer. I thought that this was one of his better answers, which is why I picked the clip for him. This is one of his better answers in the debate. He was able to point out he was the first campaign, at least from my knowledge, the first campaign to call for eliminating the filibuster, even though we know that all of the candidates who are running agree with getting rid of the filibuster. I think that making that point is very very good, and the way that he answered that question was very, very good. I think that spoke to people who were worried about the candidates on the other side, who two of which said that they would outlaw abortion with no exceptions whatsoever. So that includes the life of the mother or rape and incest. I think that there's a stark choice that you have between each side.
Who said that?
There is Kathy Barnett, who says that she doesn't believe in exceptions because she is a product of rape. The multiple candidates on the Republican side for Senate, as well as for governor. Sorry, my apologies. The one I was specifically referring to, two of the candidates for governor, I believe it was White and Mastriano, said no exceptions at all for abortions. And I know specifically Kathy. I'm trying to remember what the other in that group, clown car group.
I was going to say, between the I keep leaning into gubernatorial Republican side and the Senate, that's like more than 20 candidates, maybe. So, like, you know, hats off that you can keep them straight, Terrain. Yeah. I thought it was a solid answer at the end. I thought the beginning was a little bit weak, and I'm still gettable in this primary. I've always thought really highly of the way Fetterman has run past campaigns and sort of the brand he's built up for himself. But it just was a little bit like, you know, this is maybe a little too nitpicky, but like, don't bring up the lieutenant governor thing. It's kind of confusing in the context of the question. Like, it does matter, but he's not running for lieutenant governor now. I mean,
I disagree with you on that, Jordy. I think it's actually like they actually have vetoed anti-choice legislation, and it wasn't him technically, it was Governor Wolf, but I think
that more clearly
that is part
should of Governor Wolf have a heart attack, I would be there to veto, is just kind of not as clear as it
well
could
it's
be.
Like, still they're a team, it's like part of something that he can run on to say that he did, I'm part of a team that did this, and I'm proud of it.
But does that get to maybe kind of an issue any lieutenant governor running would have, which is it's a job that doesn't have a lot to do formally?
Yeah, that's true. But this is actually one of those things that he can point to.
But he
pretty concretely. Yeah.
But I mean, he could veto anything.
Let's point out, he didn't. He's not in that answer saying I have done this. He's saying I'm the first. But by the way, I do think it was clunky. If I'm going to be honest,
it was clunky.
It was super clunky. But what he was saying was like, you know, I can veto something if Wolf can't. But at this point, Wolf hasn't like he had like I take your point, Taylor. But he didn't do it.
but that's a semantic thing. Like the
governor. I'm talking about his semantics. his syntax, not his semantics. Sorry.
I think I do agree on that point. Like he essentially has to run on the stuff that Tom Wolf did, right?
Yeah.
Because he's the lieutenant governor. He, you know, he pretty much just kind of hangs on and waits to see if the governor survives. So
and serves on the Board of Pardons.
Yes. So like he does have to, you know, take his cues from what the Wolf administration has done and be like, Wolf has vetoed these Texas style bills. And if I was in his position, I would do the same thing.
Yeah. I don't know. I just continually feel like I want like a Bernie Sanders style, like populism, you know, fiery oratory from John Fetterman. Because I feel like that's what his image and like platform essentially like tees him up to be. And he just doesn't seem like he's delivering that.
If I may, from watching both debates that both like the two debates that had the other candidates and John Fetterman, and you might hear this in another answer later that you play, but John Fetterman has this problem where he has this, like, you're right. He has built up this image as like this tough populist who is going to go out there and fight for the people and be super confident and uber when you watch him in debates, he sounds, and I don't think necessarily, you know, I don't subscribe to the idea that like if you're a bad debater you can't be the senator, but you're going to have a much tougher time winning the election if you can't confidently convey your ideas against someone else who's trying to confidently convey their ideas. And in his debates, he sounds like a wet cat. Like he sounds so scared and shaky every time he answers a question. And it takes away from the entire persona that he has built up, which is like, I'm this like tough, brash guy. You can see me making fun of Greg Abbott on MSNBC. And now he's like, when he's being pitted against other Democrats, kind of wilting.
I agree with you very much so. It totally tarnishes his image.
Yeah. And he's obviously in the driver's seat. He is the front runner in this race. And I think that, you know, he's likely to win. And I feel like if you're going to win, you might have to go against someone who will confidently lie to the people day in and day out. And you have to be able to confidently combat that. And I don't know if he is at this point ready to do that.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I can see why he skipped debates is what I'm saying.
Yeah, and is he maybe a little unsure how to respond? Like Kenyatta in other debates has thrown some real jabs at him. So has Lamb.
And Lamb
so,
too, yeah.
And Lamb too. So I can imagine as if I were him or his campaign team being like, how do we handle this? But I think, Terrain, I think you're pointing to something more fundamental, which is not knowing what to say. Sorry, it's not the question if he doesn't know what to say. It's kind of the tone and the demeanor, right? Like, is that fair?
Yeah, I think that was a good answer, but you can hear the shakiness in that answer that he gave. In the answer he gave about choice, he was exactly right. And later on, he also in that answer said that he would have, as the senator, he votes for a Supreme Court nominee, and he would not vote for anyone who didn't agree that Roe v. Wade is settled law. That's a great answer. Across the board, delivered like someone who is like really scared of what he's about to say. And I just was like, own it. Like, what are you so, like?
Maybe,
he sounds really shaky.
Maybe Tizer is kryptonite because I saw him in one of the other debates and he was, you know, he's better.
Yeah, the airflow is just,
yeah.
Just wear my basket.
And this could be a problem because I believe, I'm not an expert in this, I believe you are actually required to wear a suit and tie in the Senate. Whereas as a governor, you have more leeway.
I mean, we can change that rule. Who cares?
Yeah. Wouldn't it be funny if it's easier to change the filibuster? Like funny, not funny. Okay. Well, now that I understand Terrain's very logical and thoughtful system for arranging these clips, now I understand that the other one you set up was Fetterman also. So we're going to do another Fetterman.
Okay. Okay.
Does that make sense?
Got it.
Let me share again.
I'm married to a former dreamer. Her country fled a dangerous situation in Brazil when she was seven. And I absolutely support a path to citizenship for those immigrants that are already here. You know, it has been vexing our country for decades that we have refused to enact compassionate, comprehensive, and common sense immigration reform in this nation. We are not going to deport our way out of this. We are going to acknowledge that immigration makes America America and makes it what America is special. And my wife's origin story has informed my own views to the point where we need to make sure we are honoring the contributions that they've made, and they deserve a path to legal citizenship. And I absolutely support comprehensive immigration reform in this country and would vote for that as your next United States senator.
Is that the full clip?
I probably. I don't have the time frame.
Yeah. Okay. Well, last time I hit... okay, never mind. Doesn't matter. Yeah. I'll go first. Yeah.
Go ahead. Mm-hmm.
I was gonna say, you know, this was stronger, right? I thought this was stronger. We will not deport our way out of this. That's the kind of line that, you know, he's made in past campaigns or in ads or things that like doesn't dance around the issues. Doesn't sound like a, whatever Terrain said, a wet cat. So that's a little bit more the Fetterman that, you know, that I've seen.
Yeah.
That can be really strong.
I mean, I think it even could be stronger. Like, you know, he could say his wife's story actually. Instead of
they had a bit of
people know it,
they had a time limit, I think, but go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. But anyway, if Fetterman was, delivering those kind of vibes all day, that'd be sweet. Mm-hmm.
I picked this one because this was one of his stronger answers, where he delivered it with that vigor that people know him for. I think that it went well. I think that it was also speaking from like a personal experience, which I think is always good to empathize with lived experience and have that inform your decision making. I think Malcolm Kenyatta also mentioned within his answer that it's super important to have people like people on the stage who is like giving a compliment, saying like it's important to have people who are able to have these lived experiences inform their opinions on this. So John was, you know, he's coming from an incredibly empathetic place because he understands this specific. So I thought that was very, very good.
John?
Yeah, yeah. my boy Johnny F.
So the next one that I was going to play is now Kenyatta. This Terrain, maybe you want to tee this up a little bit because it's when Kenyatta questions Fetterman.
Yes. So in this debate, one of the rounds, I guess, was if you can ask anybody, any other candidate a question, what would it be? Malcolm Kenyatta's eyes lit up. This man looked like a child who just got handed 14 ice cream cones. He was so, literally his eyes bolt, like, you're going to let me do this? No one's going to stop me. You're just going to let me do this. So Malcolm Kenyatta asked Fetterman about a 2013 gun violence incident that Fetterman was involved in, where he held up a gun at a black jogger claiming that he was trying to stop a school shooting on Saturday.
Okay. And then does the clip, should we like do Kenyatta and then does Fetterman respond or
Fetterman does respond? I think I left time for that response in there.
Well, what I'm asking is do you want to stop at the critique or attack and respond and us or talk, or should we listen to the whole thing?
I think it'd probably be a good idea to just listen to the whole thing and then we can go from there.
Okay. All right, let me pull that up. But we kind of got a system now, right? Like I sort of feel like
yeah. You know,
45 minutes in, we figured this out.
If I ever ran for state office, PCN would be PCN reform would be first on the list.
Oh yes,
it's not. I don't think you're here. It's not a government entity. It's a private company. So
I would abolish PCN.
Yeah, I would actually have a Pennsylvania C-SPAN.
Totally.
We need it.
Representative Kenyatta, it's your turn first.
Watch his eyes.
Here we go. If you can ask one of your opponents a question, what would it be?
It would be the question I asked John just a couple of days ago. He's had a chance to think about it, I'm sure, of whether or not the lieutenant governor is going to apologize here. Now we're in Carlisle, so maybe you have a change of heart for chasing down an unarmed black man with a 20-gauge shotgun, holding it to his chest. I'm not going to hold my breath for John's answer. I'm sure he won't apologize, as he hasn't multiple times. But here's the problem. Powerful men like John are used to having to play by a different set of rules. He wasn't held accountable because he was the mayor, and he's trying to be held accountable now.
Lieutenant Governor?
That's just not what happened. And I want everybody at home to understand how personal the issue of gun violence was to me. You know, Braddock, for context, is a 75% black community that had a significant gun violence program. I came there 20 years ago to be a GED instructor, ran for mayor because two of my students were gunned down in a very violent way. During my time as mayor, I'm proud to say that we addressed that, stopped the killing, because I've always believed that community policing and...
Time. But did you point the gun at the man's chest?
I did not.
I did not.
He says he did. Also, the police report at the time said it. And again, you don't have to take my word for it, because with powerful folks like John, any type of accountability feels like persecution. But John is not the victim here. At the time, he said he thought he committed a crime, and then he uses his re-election in Braddock as another justification for why he doesn't have to apologize. John got 186 votes in that election. 186.
Let me be clear. I was reelected in an overwhelming fashion in a community 75% black.
With 186 votes, John.
Malcolm, I'm not sure why you'd want to diminish a small marginalized black.
But the
point of the matter is that the people that reelected me know that that's not what this is about. I never pointed the weapon at anyone. And everyone in town understood that protection of the community was always in my heart. And that's what it was always consistently about.
Kent.
All right, Terrain, do you want to take first stab at this?
Yeah. Let me wait, because it echoes. So this is something that's going to come up in the general election. This is 100% something that's going to come up in the general election, and he has had literally like 9 years now to figure out something with this. And I think he just keeps whiffing on easy opportunities. Obviously, he can't do this now. But what you do is, and this is coming from like a purely political mindset, like, right? Just I'm being purely political. I'm not even being like, I'm not talking about what the right and wrong thing to do is. I'm talking about politically. What you do is you say, I thought about this. I talked to people of color about this, and they explained what hurt, and they explained why this was a mistake and why it was actually bad. And though I thought I was doing the right thing at the time, it turns out I found that I was wrong in the moment. And I, even though I was trying to do what I thought was best for the community, I made things worse. I did a bad thing. I am sorry, and I have learned, and I will not do anything like that again. That's all you have to do. That's all you have to do. His insistence on like, no. Braddock is 75% black and they reelected me, so this is fine, is crazy. Especially when Kenyatta points out that you did it by like 186 votes. Like, he's saying 75% black community like it is a very large community and overwhelmingly is like supporting him. And that's just not the case. So I feel like he just keeps whiffing on this. And
yeah,
it doesn't help when you said to the police, I might have committed a crime. Like, sorry, you're not doing a good job on this. And he had like years to dig himself out of this and just refused to, because he never had to answer for it.
Yeah, I mean, even still, like, just in the last 6 months, it felt like he's been facing questions about this very intensely for the last 6 months. And it just felt like it came out of clear blue. That this was brought up, and like, I don't know. I agree with you, Terrain. It's just like, just be the bigger person, apologize, and heal. and move on. You know, it's sad.
I've heard this almost word for word exchange happen between the two of them in another forum. And I mean, my first reaction, and I'll explain more about this, is I don't know that either one of them are really benefiting from this a lot. And I'll explain what I mean for Malcolm Cunningham in a moment. I agree with your, you know, Terrain, like if you're looking for a job as a communications advisor, like that was perfect advice, right? Like, you know, because now the not apologizing has become like this huge issue. Mm-hmm. And I'll also say that, like, you know, something he didn't say here, John Fetterman, but he talks about how the mayor is technically the head of the
chief law, head of police,
chief law enforcement. And okay, so that's true. But like, does he have any? Well, right. Does he have any gun training? I mean, you know, like, why are you driving around with a shotgun? Like, given what we know about gun safety, like, he should be more, what am I trying to say? Like, more aware and more facile with that, right? Like, his thing is, well, we heard there was an active shooter, so I grabbed a gun. I mean, that's exactly the kind of situation that leads to people getting killed by accident. You know, when you know, I've seen research about studying people being vigilantes or sort of trying to respond in active shooter situations, and they often shoot the wrong person or they get shot by the police because the police don't know who's who. So if you really understand public safety, I'm going to run and be this sort of, you know, literally white, you know, white knight on a horse, except it was a pickup truck. It's just bad, 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 bad. In terms of Kenyatta, it feels like you said it, Terrain. He's so eager to go after this, and mm-hmm. so wants to force Fetterman to humble himself that for me, it doesn't always square with his like sort of you know, righteousness through love and justice kind of theme that runs through some of his other messaging, I don't know if it's fair to say that Kenyatta, I mean, to me, he's painting Fetterman just like the people who gunned down Ahmaud Arbery in Georgia or other vigilantes. And it feels like that's an exaggeration of what happened.
Why?
Because then he turns around and he says, like in another debate, I would support this man. Like, if you really think that Fetterman is that much of an unaccountable white man who's on a power trip, then why would you support him if he's the Senate candidate? Like, if this is so central to Malcolm Kenyatta's race, because I've heard him say that. And so then I'm like, so your criticism is not as heartfelt as you're making it sound. Because if it is, how could you support him in the general if he wins the primary?
Because the general options are worse. Like, because the general options, if they get into power, will do, you know, irreparable harm to the country. Whereas John Fetterman, though doing something absolutely what Connor Lamb called disqualifying, like not even Kenyatta said that, Connor Lamb said this, it's disqualifying for him to not only do this, but have no self-reflection to know that it was wrong and apologize. I do think that this, if he pulls the trigger, this is a different story, right? Like, if he pulls the trigger, he was literally one thing away from actually being exactly like the like other situations. Look, this is literally someone who came out and did this awful thing. Like, it's
I'm not weighing what Fetterman did. Right. I'm not at all. Like, just like you were saying, you're giving political advice to Fetterman. I'm just saying political advice for Malcolm Kenyatta. To me, like the not that he's done this, but the way he's unfolding it and then his willingness to pivot and say that he would support Fetterman or in other things, it doesn't square with his overall presentation that of where he is, both as a person who preaches a kind of, in a good way, love doctrine, like a platonic love doctrine. And about his core morality. So, you know, that's the nature of politics, right? Sometimes you have to take stands for idealism. Sometimes you have to be pragmatic. So let me finish my sentence, please. So Terrain, when you're saying like, well, of course he would support whoever wins the general, even if it is Fetterman, with these reservations. So that's the pragmatic side to Kenyatta, and all politicians have to blend that. I'm just saying purely for me, it undercuts some of his appeal.
I personally like that he's doing it politically, because I think I think he's speaking for a lot of people that feel really, really hurt that Fetterman did this. And I think if he wasn't talking about it, it wouldn't be brought up. and the Republicans would go after it much more.
Yeah.
So I have not researched every single police report about this, so I don't feel qualified to say what did or didn't happen. I 100% agree that he has handled it horribly and he should have just apologized and talked about what it meant. But like maybe you all have, but I don't feel comfortable saying like I know that Fetterman was this close to killing somebody because I don't know.
I would like to say from what I've read and what Fetterman has said, you know, he has said that the gun wasn't loaded. I think is what he said. He also is like,
what good was it gonna do?
Oh well, what good was it does is it scares the shit out of someone to think they're about to get blown away by a shotgun. Like, I will say, if we're speaking purely political, I do take your point on Kenyatta, but I also would like to point out, like, me as a voter, I'm not voting for John Fetterman in the primary specifically for this reason. Like, if we're talking about what voters Malcolm Kenyatta is asking this question to try to get John Fetterman to answer for, I'm one of those people. And that is why I won't be voting for John Fetterman in this primary. However, in the general, I know that I'm likely going to have to cast my vote for John Fetterman with this horrible thing that he has done, and with you know, the with his inability to self-reflect and apologize for something he clearly should apologize for. I'm the exact voter that this is being referred to, because I think that what he did was incredibly dangerous and it was an act of gun violence. But I know that I can't deal with a fucking Senator McCormick, so I'm gonna have to vote for John Fetterman over the hedge fund billionaire that's gonna take women's rights away. Like, that's just that's the unfortunate choice we're gonna. And I think that he's trying to. I think what Kenyatta's trying to do is activate people who maybe not like me, who already have their mind made up, but people who are like, well, this incident gives me pause, and maybe I can be swayed to the other progressive option. I'm using quotes because that's what they're both framed as. They're both framed as the progressives of the race. So he's trying to be like, I'm the other progressive option, and I didn't chase black people down with guns. So. I think that's what he's going for.
Do you think that if Dr. Oz becomes senator, we'll just call him Senator Dr. Oz?
Senator Dr. Oz. Dr. Senator. Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
I mean, you brought up a great point, which is like, if Kenyatta, I'm not as sure about Fetterman's frontrunner status going back to the earlier thing, just because I think some of those numbers are a bit soft and it's name recognition and a lot could break. So given all of that, just to underscore that, yeah, for Kenyatta, he needs to make some, you know, any politician who's potentially, you know, in second or third place needs to make some, I don't mean to make this sound so calculating. I completely believe that Malcolm Kenyatta is very upset about this. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, this is a really good issue to differentiate on. Mm-hmm. It reminds me a little bit, you know, Taylor pointed this out when we interviewed him, he endorsed Biden very early, right? Mm-hmm. So there's clearly some very, and again, I'm just talking about as a politician, some very astute decision making. Yep. So,
yeah.
All right.
I think his political instincts are very good.
Yeah. And I would want one more thing. I just want to like with what you said about that. I think that it is a similar thing to when Kamala Harris in one of the early debates hit Joe Biden on his stance on busing back in like whatever the 1920s when he was in the Senate. And
also equally tone deaf Biden, right? Like equally unreflective.
Equally unapologetic and tone deaf. Right. And she became his running mate. So just one of those, like, you know, pragmatic versus you know, passion.
Yeah.
Okay. So now I think if I've done this right, this is the other Kenyatta clip, which is talking about what other doors is it not doors?
It is the word doors.
Okay. Yes. All right.
He's speaking about something that Connor Lamb had said about who he's trying to talk to and win over in this primary, and Kenyatta fired back with something else.
This election by only going to doors in Western Pennsylvania.
I should go back a little, right?
It's the slightest bit.
This is the fun video game part.
As close to 32, 35 left as you can get.
Can we both think? Yeah, I have the same thing. I have to agree. You know, if Roe v. Wade
is overturned. He tried to do, and he wanted to do it too. And, you know, he was a great Democrat who did great things for this country. Yes, you're right. No one is asking it. But what did FDR do? He said, if you will not allow us to help the American people,
okay,
I'm going to help the American people and get rid of
you guys. Representative Kenyon, this will have to be the last word on this one.
No, thank you. I think that there's a couple of things that are being said here that are fundamentally false. We're not going to win this election by only going to doors in Western Pennsylvania that the congressman keeps referencing. The doors that we need to also be focused on, maybe even more focused on, are the doors of that are in Philadelphia and southeastern Pennsylvania, the base of our party. And we keep acting as if the folks who show up for Democrats every election are somehow not as worth fighting for as some other folks. We're going to win this election by turning out folks in Philadelphia and southeastern Pennsylvania.
Did we get it about right?
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. Yeah. Now I get it. All right. Anybody want to go first? Sure. I will. Can I?
Yes, please. I was trying not to. I feel like I'm monopolizing this. I'm sorry.
No. 100% agree with Representative Kenyatta's critique, and I find the presumption that there's an either or choice here. Mm-hmm. At the core of what's wrong with a lot of how politics gets done in Pennsylvania. And if anybody is a repeat listener, maybe this will sound familiar, but like, you know, for Malcolm Kenyatta, if he's the nominee to win the Senate race, and honestly for Shapiro and for whoever is the lieutenant governor person and the state houses and the Senate, we need maximal turnout in Philly and the collar counties and in Pittsburgh and in some of the other larger cities that are becoming more and more racially diverse, like Harrisburg, Johnstown, the Lehigh Valley, Allentown, I think is 50% Latinx. Hazleton is over 55%. And I think my biggest concern about Conor Lamb is either he or his strategists have decided that this race is won or lost by rural white voters. And in pursuing that, they are going to potentially alienate so many other voters. And I agree with a lot of his criticism. It seems like he's decided that those are the only voters that matter. And last thing, it's like, it drives me crazy that like they only ever look at who they think the elector is going to be and make assumptions about it. And a campaign, especially if you do it right, you can change who the electorate is, right? And, you know, Taylor and I have talked about this. The judicial candidates in 2019, the ones who didn't win, didn't seem to get that. Voter turnout was really low in Philadelphia in 2019, and we lost important statewide races.
2021.
Thank you. Did I make any sense in that?
No, that I think that made a lot of sense. I will say, I do think that a lot of the time I agree with the representative, the state representative. I think that he was right, and we often like sort of take for granted the base of the Democratic Party, and we just go like we already have, you know, those people in the bag, so we got to talk about the issues that like who we have to talk about, you know, like we have to go into a diner and talk to, you know, 24 white people and see what's bothering them. And that's what we're going to focus on. And it's just like,
I've seen as many Mofongo places in Wilkes-Barre as diners recently, seriously.
So we often take for granted as a party, we take for granted who the Democratic voter base is. And that's to the party's detriment. You're not going to win if you don't turn out the base of the Democratic Party.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with what you just said. Like, I do think they take the base for granted. But I also think to a certain extent, it's a semantic point. Like, we need to both turn out the base and, like, talk with moderates and swing voters. Like, we need to do both at the same time. And to try and make a distinction is stupid.
But this is the thing that anybody, like, you know, I didn't get a chance to bring this up when we did our interview with Conor Lamb, but like there's a difference between a centrist and a moderate for me, and I don't know if I'm just asserting this difference now in my head, but like a moderate is somebody who on policy positions, right, will try and find some middle ground and some things that you can work on. A centrist, and I mean this in a bad way, a centrist pursues a politics of triangulation within the broad left, And so it ends up constantly leaving. And it's not just it's rhetoric and strategy, but these things matter. You create self-fulfilling prophecies in voters' minds. If you're constantly, like, I wanted to rail about this earlier in the podcast when I was listening to the Economist thing, because they were like, "Well, Democrats are going to lose the midterms." I'm like, "You're perpetuating that, right? Like, there's a way to talk about that. Like, there are trends, but you don't have to say it that way." And so, like, I want a moderate, and I think actually Biden did a good job of this. Somebody who's a moderate to run in a way that continues to expand the possibility of a politics of hope and cross-race, cross-class, cross-class solidarity, and not to run in a way that deepens those problems. And that's what I did not like about Blue Dog Democrats in the 90s and the aughts and now. And it's what I don't like about some move. Honestly, Conor Lamb's rhetoric is, I don't know that he's doing it on purpose, but if you're not participating in a kind of politics that will enable us all to win everywhere in Pennsylvania, you're not really addressing the deep problems that we have on the left.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would like I'd like to point out I was kidding when I said we're going to lose the House. I think we are, but I was kidding.
Are we getting some angry comments?
Well, I mean, it's important to understand that we're like running into, you know, a strong headwind, mm-hmm. but it's not preordained. I mean,
no. I just want to really quickly, there are multiple things that kind of broke Democrats' way in a way that wasn't expected. Gerrymandering in 2020, after the 2020 census, wasn't nearly as destructive as we thought it was going to be. We still have to figure out what's going on in New York. Their map got like straight up rejected so we kind of have to see what's going on there. But truly, it wasn't nearly as bad as it was. The Republicans are trying to run a lot of like weird MAGA folks that like only appeal to the farthest right of the party, and that's who more moderate Republicans. You know, and I'm talking of voters, not representatives. They sort of rejected that in the last election. They'll potentially do it again. I mean, there are definitely upsides that Democrats need to capitalize on. It's going to be hard, but it's not going to be impossible.
Have you guys ever seen those soccer videos of the like person like that breaks away, that's like dribbling towards the goal, and then just like
that's called a striker.
Yeah, the striker, and they just totally miff the ball and it goes off wind. I kind of have a feeling that's what the Republicans are going to do, because they're going to elect some totally unelectable people, because they like feel like they're going to get it no matter what. And I don't know. Like I
don't even know if it's that. I just think they're so freaking afraid of the MAGA base.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. I don't know. So that's
I agree with you.
I don't think it's totally in the bag for Republicans either. No. There's a couple of other headwinds. In addition to the gerrymandering that they face.
So the gerrymandering is a huge point that's been a structural advantage for Democrats. I'm sorry, for Republicans, especially since 2010. But also
2012, actually.
2012, right.
Yeah, sorry.
Right. But when these things, but when these like prognosticators say like, this always happens, like I can double check, but it's like starting in like the 80s or the 70s. And so, you know, midterm, there's like 6 or 7 or 8. So, I mean, yes, it's a trend, but it's not like we're dealing with, research about human events that's got thousands of data points. Like I find like the creation of supposedly inviolable political laws of gravity in a lot of political punditry, just lazy thinking, lazy analysis. And again, I'm not saying like it's relevant to say that, you know, it would break the trend or whatever, but it's not impossible. And just this air of inevitability around so much, I don't know. I just really can't stand most mainstream political reporting. So I made a podcast.
Makes sense.
Now we're part of the lamestream media.
If only. We can dream.
Yeah, we need more sponsors.
I have Chuck Todd on next week.
Listen to me. Listen to me. Look at me. I like believed it for a sec. Well, we're gonna wrap up here. I was sort of aware that we made fewer jokes during this than we often do on things because maybe all of us feel that the stakes are so important.
They are.
I mean,
period.
Maybe we can end with this. I mean, first of all, I think for very different reasons, I think all three could potentially be very, very strong candidates.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, this process, especially for Fetterman, who, you know, maybe seemed really, you know, like a strong front runner, it's revealing some weaknesses that he's going to need to, do a better job on if he wants to make the strongest possible run. And it's bringing Connor Lamb and Malcolm Kenyatta, you know, into obviously much wider audiences. You know, Kenyatta, and I mean this in a complimentary way, is ambitious as hell. I don't know, how old is he? Like 30 something?
He's 31, I think. I think he's a year older than me.
31. So much poise and political smarts, and his charisma is palpable. And I will say Connor Lamb is really smart on policy things. You know, hopefully our interview will come out later. But anyway, one thing, Taylor, just kind of threw this out. Like, I feel like, you know, sometimes people ask me, like, well, who are you voting for? And I'm like, I don't like doing that. Like, you make your own decision. But I wonder, like, I've thought this in the past. Maybe we've talked about it. But, like, what if we sort of put out a thing as barnstorming, like, here are three good reasons to vote for each one of these?
That's what we're doing with the case for.
Yeah, that's right.
Kenyatta, the case for Connor
Lamb. Right.
I don't know if we'll get to the case for John Fetterman.
Oh, we will. I mean, we kind of have to at this point.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, we don't have to, but all right.
Yeah, we don't have to do anything.
We don't have to do anything.
I would say, I know that you're wrapping up. I do want to say one more thing that I think is very, very important for John Fetterman, if he's listening. What's up, dog? I think that one of the things that I think is incredibly important for him, one, obviously more confidence in debates. Take that confidence that you display outward, like out on MSNBC, and bring that into your debate performances. That would be super important. But also, he needs to not miss, like, the Democratic Party as a whole does this really fun thing where they just miss wide open layups, and I just don't understand why it happens. John Fetterman was challenged by Connor Lamb in this debate, where Connor Lamb said to John Fetterman that he thinks that his politics are too out of the mainstream to win statewide. Now, reminder, he said that to the lieutenant governor of the state of Pennsylvania. He said that, I don't think you, Lieutenant Governor Fetterman, can win statewide. Now, Fetterman has said numerous times, I'm the only person on the stage who's won statewide. When presented with that opportunity to absolutely dunk on this man harder than I've seen, like Shaq break the backboard dunk. Whiffed, didn't say a word, was so quiet. And I'm like, what do you do? I watched with my partner and co-host of Alcoholics, Katrina, and we both were screaming at the top of our lungs because we think it's important to, you know, we're not voting for Fetterman in the primary, but my goodness, he teed you up, crack that grand slam in his face. I don't understand how he didn't do it. He needs to take advantage of opportunities that he gets and not like just kind of let them fly past him. That's tantamount to making a persuasive argument. Don't let moments pass you by. That could have been a great moment for an ad where he's like, I'm the only one who's won statewide and some people don't remember, and to just boom, alley-oop dunk, get it's over. But he let
totally
it go by.
I mean, I don't understand. Do that and then pivot to how popular Medicare is as a program.
Yes,
you know, that's, you it. Know, yeah,
you do like just
these are popular things.
Point out the truths about you, especially when someone just lied about you in a verifiable way. Like, yeah, he said you can't win statewide and you won like huge statewide. Tell people that in that moment, challenge him to like challenge him and make sure that they know he's completely out of his depth. He got this basic fact wrong. You can't let those kinds of moments slip away.
Great point.
Here.
Maybe you'll have an offer on your voicemail tomorrow, Terrain, to come on as a political fixer because you're giving such great advice.
I'm just saying, I know.
I'm serious. It's good advice.
I would love to start my own communications firm, but the problem is any candidate worth their salt would Google me and go, absolutely not. I've seen what this lunatic says on his podcast. No.
Dude, Steve Bannon was like a consigliere to, you know, a president.
Mike Pence a radio talk show?
Yeah, he was, and he doesn't seem very. I don't know.
No,
was
I don't.
He kind of a shock jock, almost like a conservative shock jock.
He had I'm pretty like, sure one of his shows was specifically about the dangers of the movie Milan. So, like, That's who Mike Pence is. In case everyone forgot who Mike Pence is, that's Mike Pence.
Listen, and just think, you know, heroism, you can be heroic and not be a hero. Just think about, like, this whole thing. Like, I'm serious with Jamie Raskin. Have you guys seen this? Like, I will not get in that car. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, phew. Okay.
I haven't seen that.
Oh, well, basically,
the
Secret Service wanted to whisk him out of the Capitol on January 6th, and Jamie Raskin has said the scariest six words I've heard in this whole thing about January 6th is Mike Pence in that moment, like realizing that, like, when a coup is happening, if the elected leaders leave the building, literally leave the building of power, they often don't come back. And Pence realizing, like, if I leave, something might happen with the election, so I am not getting in that car. And that the Secret Service were pushing him to do it is what Raskin is talking about.
Yeah, he didn't trust Trump's Secret Service people to do the right thing, which I think is fair. Mm-hmm. But don't worry, after it was all said and done, he said he minimized the situation so thoroughly, mm-hmm, by going, mm-hmm, me and the former president had some disagreements.
I didn't
want to be hanged on the steps of the Capitol, and he thought I maybe should. We're not sure.
It was just an expression, Terrain.
I love Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
Why don't we hang out with Mike Pence?
That's, I think, what it was. I think Mike was like, I really hope that's what they mean.
It's really so hot out. Chill. I just might hang Mike Pence.
That was a love it one, right?
Yeah, it is a love it one.
I didn't recognize that. All right. We've gone way over. Thank you, Terrain, for helping us with the clips and for coming on. And thank you, everybody. Check out Alcoholitics.
Waterloo, Lackawanna, Fairview, Bellevue, Sweet Roots, Susquehanna, Lewisburg, Stroudsburg, Gillysburg, Orbisonia, Harrisburg, Pittsburgh, Wellesburg, Robsonia, Mountaintop, Glen Rock, Flat Rock, Sunbury, St. Mary, Schick, Shanny, Big Shanny, I'm a Danny. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. I cross the valleys fair, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Belfont, Southmont, Westmont, Wilmersdorf, Nordmont, Dormont, Lebanon, Holmes Wharf, Cedar Springs, Bowling Springs, Chess Springs, Center Bridge, Centersport, Leesport, Williamsport, Brackenridge, Lumber City, Central City, Lake City, Clearfield, Westfield, Wentfield, Richfield, big deal. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. I crossed the valley fair, man. I be the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. Glenn, Wilpen, Tunnelton, Conestoga, Bakerton, Curry Run, Smoke Run, Sanatoga, Slickville, Smithville, Flicksville, Maxtoney, Youngwood, Edgewood, Hopwood, Punxsutawney, Whitehall, Blue Ball, Center Hall, North Apollo, Delano, Renovo, Laredo, let's go. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. I cross the valley fair, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. Been to Stump Creek, Pence Creek, Pine Creek, Chambersburg, Middle Creek, Blakesley, Falls Creek, Shepherdsburg, Johnstown, Allentown, Shepherdstown, Lords Valley, Daisytown, Doylestown, Downingtown, Cherry Valley, Plain Grove, Mill Grove, Mechanics Grove, Swissvale, Ferndale, Carbondale, Monongahela, oh well. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. I cross the valley fair, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. Oh, I've been everywhere, man.